So you think you got what it takes? You think you can record a podcast? If you dreamt of the glamour and glitz of being a podcaster, well, then you need to check out the Anchor app. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you think you got what it takes, then you need to go to anchor.fm/start and get started today.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain,
Ricky Ricardo.
All right, everyone, welcome to a brand new edition of the Swift Kicks podcast. I'm Alex, and with me, as always, are Ben and Steven. Before we get started today, we ask that you like, subscribe, and share this podcast with anyone you think may like it. Leave us a five-star review for an air fry from Ben. So, boys, it would be easy to start by saying Man United are sitting at the top of the table and it's all theirs to lose. But, Steve, let's start with you. Can an argument be made that anyone in the top five right now could come out on top of this as champions?
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, the top of the table is so tight still after last weekend's action. United with 37. We have City with 35. Leicester 35. Liverpool with 34 points. And Tottenham with 33 points. That's just the top five itself. Outside the top five is still quite tight. Not saying that those would be, you know, obviously have a less chance of gaining the title. But to answer your question, yeah, 100%. City have been looking a bit dominant lately. I think there's a solid case can be made for them. Liverpool, as always, once they start hopefully getting some of their adult senior center back players coming back into the foray and Jordan Henderson can stop playing center back, I think potentially they can start making a more solid push as well. And then Leicester, I think it's easy to be dismissive of Leicester, but it's more we've passed the halfway point and they're in third. And 2 points off top. So I think it's still anyone's ball game for sure.
Yeah. Ben, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said that Man United missed an opportunity to beat Liverpool. Do you agree with that?
No, I think he was pandering to his fans. I think they were clearly playing for 1 point. Like, they defended with 11 the whole game. Like, at one point, Rashford, Fernandez, Martial were all on the edge of their own box, like clearing balls out. And it wasn't like they were under that much pressure other than any other thing than the fact they were sitting real deep. Another side who's really catching everyone's attention right now, Man City, sitting at 17 games with a game in hand. A win, which you got to assume they're going to be able to walk away with, would put them in first place with 38 points. Pep has found some form without Sergio Aguero in the side, and I think it's fair to say that they're expecting him back potentially any game now, which makes them that much more dangerous.
It's strange to hear Kun Aguero's name now. I feel like he's been on the sideline for so long. He'll come back for a game. He'll make a substitute appearance and then another substitute appearance, get injured, and then you don't hear about him for another 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Man City, you know, I mean, they're really kind of like the silent assassins right now. You know, I think in a way, I think Ben is saying too, is they're really in pole position for the championship right now. I mean, sitting only 2 points behind Man United with a game in hand. The pressure's on Man United really probably to lose this one at this point, but there is still a good decent amount of the season left. And I really think that, you know, it's really probably amongst the top four. I don't see Tottenham being a team that will pull this one out, but among the top four right now, Liverpool, Leicester City, Man City, and Man United, I think those are, that's a strong race and probably one of the best races for the Premier League that we've had in a couple of years. You know, one thing I want to talk about with Liverpool, though, is, I mean, that game against Man United, I think they just did not look like they had any sort of spark in attack. I know that they were playing with a very sort of hodgepodge team in the back, especially, but they just don't look like what they were last season. I mean, last season, they were a team that would have pulled out wins against anybody. You know, they would have found a way to win. And this year, they don't seem to have, again, that spark. What do you think, Steve?
I just thought, you know, you sometimes find those games where both sets of teams, albeit however level of quality that they are, they are just so determined to not be the first ones to make a glaring mistake. They're so resolute in not conceding that they almost don't push to score. They're like, scoring's like second priority. First priority is we are not going to be the first ones to concede a goal. They're going to concede a goal first. It just seemed like that was the primary focus the whole time. Liverpool started, I think, making a few more advances earlier on than United, but it was basically what I kind of thought what Ben said as well. It just seemed maybe not necessarily playing for a point, but not 100% going for the win. So I guess this is a different way of saying playing for the point. I agree with Ben.
Yeah, they were playing very conservative football. Another interesting result out of this weekend was seeing Leicester come out on top against Southampton. I know Southampton aren't like the league dominators, but they're keeping themselves relevant. It's a big win for them. I think Leicester is going to be interesting to see where they end up as well. You know, shifting gears as we tumble down to the bottom of the Premier League. Alex, I got to ask Steve Bruce, is he actually Peter Kay's father? And
I don't know about that.
Could we please just take a moment to ask what the hell's going on in Newcastle with the cartoon army?
You always, as a fan, you hope that you're going to get a win. But part of me was kind of hoping that we would get this loss against Arsenal, because I think that it's time, well past time, that Steve Bruce is out. He came out after the match today and he said something to the effect of, I'm the one that is going to lead this team, you know, to glory in the Premier League and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, these are things that you say, maybe you had a bad start, you know, you lost your first three games or you've only had 1 point out of them, you know, don't worry, I've got everything. We're just working out stuff. This is well past middle of the season now. And you're still saying that kind of stuff. And we haven't won in, I think, six games now. So
definitely not the past five.
Yeah. It's not working out. It's, you know, you are not the person that's going to be taking us to any sort of glory. He's sort of given himself this own personal reboot. You know, he's saying, I'm going to do things my way now, as if anybody else was ever there, you know, telling him what to do. And same results. So, you know, whatever his way or whoever's way it is,
right,
that's been telling it. I mean, it's clear that it's not just a Steve Bruce problem. You know, there's a clear sort of rot in the system that needs to be cut out. And I don't know how quickly that can be done. And I don't know that can be done unless there is a total takeover of the team. And, you know,
he was the one that came out with that public statement saying, not only we're doing it my way, but also he was like indirectly calling out people. I don't know if it was players or coaching staff. He was like, there's people who don't seem to be committed to the cause or committed to my methods, and we'll have to deal with them appropriately because the results have not been, they've not been right, which does fall on me. But we are 100% now doing it my way, as if like before they weren't doing it 100% his way.
Exactly. Yeah. He accused the players of throwing in a hand grenade. Like,
yeah, kind of. Yeah.
But then this is the same guy who, you know, is in the locker room or wherever the training ground and is calling him absolute, you know, terrible. So
that's not what he called him.
That's not what he called him. It's a family podcast. So yeah, I mean, you know, he has no idea how to handle the set of players that he has. He's had issues with some players, you know, I've had COVID issues and they still aren't playing and everything, but okay. You know, again, we know it's this day and age, we need to be able to deal with that. And he doesn't have any team that he can put forth that will put forward seemingly any effort or put forth the tactics, if he has any, that he's, you know, asking them to play out, and we end up with the same results.
Yeah, I think this is, I don't want to say typical for Newcastle, but Newcastle are known to go through these spells of just like, what are you doing? It'll be interesting to see if Steve Bruce can pull him out of it. And honestly, I don't see, with like a new management coming in, potentially new ownership, it makes any sense for them to can him, right? Like, you might as well keep him there, see what he's got for at least a couple more months to see if he can pull him out. And you guys aren't in too bad a shape. The bottom three in the table are so far down that it would take a real disaster to end up there. And it does look like your schedule should loosen up a little bit. But another side that I think is in deep water, and I think we've said this all along, Sheffield. Like, can't say anything else. Chris Wilder over there, right?
No.
is wilding out that 3-5-2 against everyone, and it's just not working. Fulham, I think, got a little unlucky against Chelsea. I think Chelsea kind of showed that they're not that great still. They got a lucky win with against 10 men. So Premier League shaping up pretty nicely, and I think it's been a good January so far. And FA Cup, Man U against Liverpool part two next weekend, which will be a good rematch.
Second verse, same as the first.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a different format from Ollie, hopefully, right? I think you're going to see much more attacking football. I do think United like to sit deep, and I do think they like to invite pressure on and then play the counter-attacking football. But I think, you know, and that's why I think the second half of both of those halves, you saw United in the final third heavily pressing. But I think you're going to see a little bit more fire, hopefully, from the players.
One thing I wanted to go back to with Newcastle and Arsenal is one thing I noticed from Arsenal is they just have such a, and I think historically they've sort of had a little bit of this, but they have such a good youth academy, and they can pull people from up from the youth. So even at a time when they're struggling, I mean, you know, they're still not having the best season by their standards, you know, I mean, they're doing a lot better. And I think they've won actually probably 4 or 5 games on the row now. But Emile Smith-Rowe today, I mean, he looked phenomenal. And he's what, 20 years old. Who's their other really young player? The number 7.
Saka.
Yeah, Saka. Yeah. I mean, he's I've watched Arsenal play a couple of games now, and he stood out to me. Little 5'10" player, you know, running around the middle of the pitch, but just really delivering on everything. You know, I've seen some comparisons from Emile Smith-Rowe to like Robert Perez, you know, people like that. And just Newcastle doesn't have anything like that. You know, I mean, there are a couple teams, probably Man City has a pretty decent youth academy. Man United does. But, you know, not many teams are able to just, you know, be in a struggling position and be able to pull out players from not necessarily the transfer market or so, you know, having to buy players and always feeling like you have to appease the fans by spending big money on people that end up being flops. There's something to say, I think, for having that youth development academy behind your team.
What are some notable names that have come out of the Arsenal Academy? Because I'm having a hard time thinking of any, to be honest. I feel like it's pretty common with the big clubs. I mean, yeah, you have a couple like, I mean, City with Phil Foden. I think Phil Foden came as a product of City, right?
Yeah.
Is that where he came up? Yeah, but yeah. I'm having a difficult time recalling really many players that have come through the top sides. Now, obviously, people can recall, you know, with United and all that. But United recently, I mean, who have they brought through? Jesse Lingard? He's a player that is in the first team but doesn't play.
Yeah.
Chelsea, who have they brought through? I mean, I can't recall. I'm having a hard time recalling much about the youth academies and what current products are out there now.
I mean, we could look at United's, but like United produced Pogba. They produced, who else they got? Scott McTominay came up through them. They've got a couple others. Okay. Arsenal, okay. I do think in the 90s had a lot more success coming out of their academy. I think they had a lot more talent coming through their system. But I think Arsenal most notably had, I want to say Andy Cole came up with them.
Fabregas came from Arsenal, just to dive in there.
Barcelona raised him up, though, didn't he? Barcelona. He came from La Mesa and then went to.
Yeah, but I mean, they bought him at like 16 years old.
Yeah.
And then Tony Adams. I mean, I know that's going back a little bit of a ways, but Tony Adams.
I guess I was thinking more like in the past, you know.
Yeah, past couple
7 years. Past like 7 years, I was trying to think of like notable names that have come through like youth academies in the top like 5, mm-hmm. 6 teams, and I was just having temporary.
Yeah, and okay, maybe it's not necessarily your stars, but I think, I mean, just going to today's game that they played against Newcastle. I mean, those were the two names that stood out. Okay, Lacazette scored most of the goals, but they were set up by those younger players. You know, those are, you know, role players that you can have that you can rely on in you know, throughout a season. Is
for sure you need them.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
I think Arsenal are like one player away, and I think the player that they need to replace is Aubameyang. I know he scored 2 today. I think he's not going to do the trick to carry him forwards, but I think Arsenal as a whole, they're getting there, right? Like we were just about to throw Arteta under the bus, and he's resurrected them from where they were.
Who do you replace Aubameyang with?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, right?
Zlatan.
Well, yeah, always. Zlatan. That's a go-to. The problem is he's not on on the inexpensive side, right? I think Arsenal are lacking a little bit of youth up top, right? I think he's getting a little long in the tooth.
But didn't he just re-sign?
Yeah, I think, yeah, he did. He did just resign. He's past 30. Is he 31 or like 33?
I think he's 33.
He's, yeah.
31.
I prefer to
fact check, Ben.
He's 33. They age differently at Arsenal.
So, Ben, Ibra, you know, he might not be the cheapest target for an Arsenal or somebody. And that's probably because of the form he is over in Italy. I know you've been paying attention to that. He scored 2 goals against Cagliari, AC Milan sitting top of the table right now. Ibra scored 13 goals in 13 matches. Is he unstoppable?
I call that a dramatic pause for such a ridiculous question. Of course he's unstoppable. It's Ibrahimovic. He decided he'd score a brace today. He knew he wasn't at a 1-to-1 ratio with goals to games, so he put in a little bit of extra effort. Even decided to score in the 7th minute with a PK. But no, AC Milan are actually dominating the Italian Serie A right now. Inter are close on their heels. Juventus are still a little ways down there. They seem to be struggling at home, really, in their games.
I wonder what Ronaldo's thinking.
I think he's probably taking it easy.
In the Juve camp is like, man, like, I've not been 5th place in the league, and I couldn't remember how long.
True.
Do I still want to be at this club?
You think that there's a little bit of nagging in the back of his head that it's time to go because things aren't going great? I don't know, man.
Maybe. That's... with Andrea Pirlo at the helm, it's like, man, this guy's got zero experience coaching a team. We're in 5th place. Finances aren't that great.
You think he's auditing the books there? You think he's...
I mean, this has been public. They've been public.
And it's not out of the ordinary.
It's lost to Inter. So, like, I mean, big teams that they're playing against. I mean, they got blanked against Inter. I don't know. I just think it's something that he's probably... it's definitely on his mind.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. It's actually a pretty good take. I think it's interesting to see how they're going to shake out. There's, you know, a ton of time left. Napoli is kind of surprising. You know, they put a hurting on Florente yesterday with 6-0, and it's the league has got some pretty good competition there. And it's cool to see a team like Juventus be positioned where they're still relevant, but they got to fight for it, which makes the end of their season particularly interesting to watch. You know what though? I think Ronaldo is going to stay put. I think he likes those beaches. I don't think he's got any plans to go anywhere. If anything, you might see him slide around to a different team in Italy. I think that's where he wants to kind of retire one day.
Dang, a different team in Italy. That'd be pretty crazy.
I think Inter and AC being back in the mix is truly something interesting. I can't remember if we talked about this or not, or if it got cut, but you know, the San Siro is one of the coolest stadiums out there. It's such a unique place. I had the opportunity to go a while ago now, but like it's in this giant square and all these trains lead into it. So there's a square of bars around the stadium and half of them are red and half of them are blue. And you can just tell everything in that city just breeds soccer. And it's just great to see that kind of atmosphere. So Italian soccer, it's nice to see it coming back around. I think they're doing it, you know, I think the competition's definitely helping it out and they've got some money behind it. ESPN's picked them up this year.
Not a whole bunch of money. I mean, Inter Milan, I mean, they've going on with the financial problems we were talking about at Juventus. I mean, even Inter, who they've had to defer player salaries for the month. So I think it was July and August. They still haven't gotten paid for that. They have a prolonged deadline now back until February before they get docked points, before they can pay that. And also, Hakimi, the Inter player as well, who they had gotten from Real Madrid. They have had to reschedule the payment for him twice because their books don't afford that. They can't meet their payments is basically it at Inter Milan. And Juve, so Juve's been public about their financial crisis, not crisis, problems. I wouldn't say it's a crisis. Inter have been, it's now public about their financial problems. I don't really know much about AC Milan and what's going on in terms of like the books there. I know that they're in works of signing Mario Mandzukic, bringing him back from Qatar, and one other player I can't quite remember right now. But these are the big teams that we're talking about in terms of financial struggles. I can only imagine what the smaller teams in Serie A are experiencing as well that don't make the headlines. So with, I'm just thinking back to the Ronaldo comment. If you think he does move, he would move to another team in Italy. I don't know if that would be the case either.
The money's there.
I don't think the money's in Italy, period, right now. I think COVID has had a serious impact financially on Italy and the clubs in Italy. And I don't think that long-term, at least for Ronaldo, I don't think that that's there. But also, I mean, we'll just see just livelihood of these clubs. We'll only the future will tell. But there are these reports coming out now, and it's interesting to see that these big clubs are not able to pay.
Call that a crisis. I think you're not.
The players are understanding. I mean, the article that I was reading was the players are understanding of the problem, are okay with it, but like Serie A has stipulations where if you don't pay players within a certain time frame of when they're due, that you're docked points, and Inter are treading on thin ice in that regard. So yeah. At least that's what the
article. I know Inter is linked with potentially buying Jesse Lingard from Man United. So they are still sort of in the hunt for players. I mean, I guess Jesse Lingard probably isn't going to attract your big, big money. So that's probably a realistic target for really any club right now. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think, to your point, Steve, it's not only going to be the Italian league that's affected by this. It's going to be a lot of teams across a broad swath of the European soccer leagues that are going to have mm-hmm. issues with their teams just not having had any fans in the stadiums, no revenue, yeah. but smaller revenue streams and everything like right. that.
It is not a sustainable model. So in Italy is the first, one of the first ones showing just that.
Yeah. And they were one of the hardest hits. So
they were also pretty fragile financially going into it. Right. Like they've had their woes to begin with. You would think that there's got to be something to help out. I don't know what that answer is, right? Maybe it's not punishing teams for not paying right now with everything going on. If the players are agreeing to it, that's one thing, right? The players do have the option to not play. I mean, you're not getting paid, right? So I think there's something to that as well. And it'd be a shame to see such an interesting season have such a smear on it, right? Like with
everything going on,
it's a shame to hear, and I think it's good to get that news out there, right? Because people are going to want to know out of nowhere, all of a sudden, Inter hit with like a 10-point penalty. That's wild.
Yeah, and Steve, let's talk about COVID and players. Celtic, Neil Lennon came out, had a bit of a rant today, I guess. Said that nobody on his team has COVID, but two players tested positive today, I believe. And also is coming out against the media for criticizing them and, bullying them, I think is what one of the words that he used for having a little bit of drink over in Dubai and back.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
I see both sides of this. I mean, I do think that the public's opinions and the public the noise from the public is very, I don't want to say cruel, but it's just very harsh. I do think that they're being treated a bit unfairly. Other clubs have done similar things and haven't had the same repercussions as Celtic. I honestly do think this all stems from the hype of going for 10 in a row, and if we did not win 10 in a row, anything that was accomplished within the season, no matter how big, would still be deemed a failure. And because now people and players, everyone, are becoming aware of the fact and the truth that 10 in a row is not going to happen, that it's just become an unbearably toxic atmosphere to be a part of. I mean, even a fan from the States, I can see it's palpable, the toxicity on social media. I can only imagine what it must be like to be in Scotland, to be in Glasgow, to be part of the Celtic camp. I can only imagine how counterproductive this environment must be. And Neil Lennon is trying to set the record straight and trying to get everyone on board, trying to turn a corner and trying to get everyone on the same page. So I understand him coming at it from that point of view. But flipping the coin here, I mean, the repercussions of everything that happened so far is just, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, they take a Dubai trip. Yes, it's proven to have success in the past, but the past didn't have COVID. Planning a trip in the height of a pandemic to Dubai and seeing these pictures of players and coaching staff having a beer. Yes, I get it. You're on you're on a trip and you could be training for 23 hours a day and just have an hour just to chill out for a sec, but it just doesn't, it's bad PR. You're setting yourself up to be roasted, especially when you're not doing well in the league. I mean, you've just, hindsight vision is 2020, but it's just crazy how you could not have foreseen, we're not doing so hot in the league. There's a pandemic going on. Everything's in a very delicate state right now. Fans are on edge. Should we still take the trip to Dubai? Oh, we've got the tickets already. We've done it in the past. It's been great.
Old married couple? Get out of here. Here's the thing, though. Do they always go to Dubai? Is it usual?
I don't know if it's particularly Dubai, but I think they've been to like the UAE. They've been to places in the similar geographic area for like a mid-season training camp, just to kind of refresh the batteries, change a pace, kind of refresh after that holiday crunch season or like the schedule.
It doesn't make sense to me for a couple of reasons. So for one, you can't. So from a sports science standpoint, it takes 2 weeks for your blood to fully adjust when you travel that far to a different climate, different weather system, different temperature, everything like that. 2 weeks, right? This is supposed to be a world-class team. This is top of the league. It's just doesn't make sense. And granted, they do it all the time, but in a day and age when teams are struggling so much with finances, like give that money to like a Aberdeen. I don't know. Like give it to a team that can't afford to pay their players right now, right? Like give it out there to like, don't, why are you spending money on that? And not only that, why would you take a losing team on vacation? Right. The other thing though with Celtic, I think is kind of a shame is, it speaks to the kind of high standards that you're talking about. We're really upset that Celtic are in second place. You know what I mean? And they could have been more competitive and contending, but really you're talking about a team that is in second place. It's not like they've fallen off the face of the earth. So like to be calling for the manager's head on a platter is just ridiculous. He's got to have a chance to redeem himself next year, if you ask me. I think the trip was weird, like not being fun. That's a good way to put it. You were a losing team. They've thrown in the towel. They're going out. They're going out and partying. It is what it is. It's just.
I personally think he needs to go. Yeah, I think he needs to go. I mean, they come back from the trip, and don't quote me on the number, but 16 members of first team squad and playing staff, or I'm sorry, and coaching staff are now in self isolation for X amount of time. I believe 3 of them are in intensive care. It's just, you just look back at the whole event and think, why?
Yeah.
What's the point? I mean, Peter Lull, the CEO, has come out and had to like publicly try and gather the reinstill confidence in the public in that their team is still, you know, fighting for everything. Neil Lennon has had his public thing today. Just not a good look. Every time that they've come publicly trying to correct the wrongs that they've done, it just looks, it just doesn't have the effect that they want. And I think it's at the point now where they just need to, it's a wash. I said this last episode, the season is a wash. We'll do with it the best we can, but we need to start planning as quick as possible for the next campaign. And to do that, I think Neil Lennon and coaching staff, people are obviously going to want Peter Lowell to go, but the CEO, we'll see if he ever goes. It's the same thing with Mike Ashley. You're just counting on something that you don't know if it's ever going to happen.
Would you have rather they come out and just like, hey, that was actually a bad idea, sorry.
And they've said that. They've said that, like, yes, we made a mistake, but then they keep trying to justify it. It's like, yes, sorry, but we did.
I'm not actually sorry. Like, we do it again.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's what it sounds like. It's sorry, like, right. And it's just like, you just don't get a sense of direction. You just don't get a sense of, it's an ever increasing in size snowball of negativity, and every time they try to detract from it, The snowball, they just add to the snowball. The snowball just keeps getting bigger. And I don't know how the snowball is going to get smaller until players can see an intent from the board where, right, this is the clean slate. We're going forward from this point. This is our springboard. This is what we're using now. There's no signal of intent. There's no signs of change happening at Celtic now.
They're not linked with Ibrahimovic?
They're not. They're not.
Ben, just another stat, just to fill your head a little bit more. He's now scored in the past 23 years. He's scored a goal in every year for the past 23 years.
That's our granddaddy's Latin.
That's right.
I'm going to start sending him Christmas cards and see if he responds.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And I'm going to address it to granddaddy's Latin and just let him have it and see what it goes. Do you guys see that a real world-class player, not that Zlatan isn't, but just talking about Danny Welbeck somehow, Wayne Rooney has retired from the game as a player and is going to continue to pursue coaching at Derby County, which I thought was pretty interesting. It's due time, right? Mm-hmm. And Alex Ferguson's come out and said that it's all about results at this point. You know, like there's no bad days as a coach. Which was kind of interesting to see. And, you know, it's just worth recognizing that Wayne Rooney is like the second leading scorer in all of Premier League history. Do you guys know who he's behind?
Shearer.
The only positive thing we will say about Newcastle on this show in our lifetime is that Alan Shearer is number one. You know, looking back, what a career he's had. You know, at 16 coming on, scoring a goal against England's keeper David Seaman, you know, that there's that clip at the beginning of all the commercials that shows Wayne Rooney's goal against Seaman is amazing.
You know how old that commercial makes me feel? They run through those highlights and I just go, oh yeah, I remember watching that
in middle school.
Oh, that was wow.
Top Manchester United all-time leading goal scorer, England national team all-time leading goal scorer. That time period from the middle of the 2000s to late 2000s, that guy was frightening.
Yeah,
absolutely frightening. He was a bulldog.
Yeah,
just played with such anger, ferocity, and just a determination to win. Yeah. That was the United that I grew up with.
That's what we want to see again.
Yeah, of course. That's what everyone wants to see. Well, United fans want to see again. But it was another thing too. Was interesting, and it's funny that it hasn't dawned on me since this example. But what an awesome transition into retirement that is for Wayne Rooney. Is that he signs on to Derby as a player manager, knowing that the end game is to become manager. And then when that role becomes available, he's got it. So it's just like, all right, that kind of forces him into retirement, forces him into the next transition, into the next phase, which is just being a coach. You don't have the player who's just kind of, you know, have got a constant battle with mind and body about, can I do another season? Can I not do another season? They draw it out too long. Then they stay around long enough to become the villain where they're not contributing. And it just, they sour the relationship and they kind of go out on that sour note. Although Wayne Rooney, yes, he's playing at Derby County in the championship, bottom of the championship.
That's what we love about currently. Him. Right? Like, the thing is he gives it his all. He's not there for like a paycheck. He's there because he wants to play competitive. Right, like he was in the MLS, he tried the whole let me go sell jerseys thing, and he was hit like so much better than everyone on the field when he'd come on. And when he was playing, you remember that goal he scored or that assist he had where he chased a player down, tackled a guy with like a last minute winner
that did socials for weeks. It's still, right. I still find
that's
it.
Just
it.
That's the kind of like passion and commitment he brought to the field that was just so. So interesting to see, and really it's hard to come by. There's not a whole lot like him. I think, you know, Vardy's got a similar attitude of like, I'm here for the team, let's go. You know, you mentioned that ferocity that United team had. You know what the one thing was that's missing?
Sir Alex?
No, I don't think it's him. He definitely played a huge part in it, but for me it's Paul Scholes. You had a Paul Scholes on that side. Paul Scholes is probably one of the best center midfielders of our lifetime. Tremendous player.
Oh, for sure. They're not
able to replace that. And that's been the biggest hole in United since those days. You can replace the superstars around him. He was really that piece keeping them all together. Looking at the top all-time goal scorers, Alex, you see who's in third? You got Alan Shearer is number one. Wayne Rooney is number two. Andy Cole was in third.
Andy Cole? Yeah. Really?
And then you got Sergio Aguero nipping at
your feet. Frank Lampard's, he's got to be up there as well.
Amps? No.
He's like six or seven, isn't he? Yeah, I was about to say, he's the highest scoring midfielder.
He's still a Spooner. Throw that out there.
Was a Spooner in fifth place.
Speaking of Spooners, let's transition into where are they now. Last week, I gave you guys a little bit of geography, took you to Djibouti. This week, I'd like to I'd be remiss to not mention this first, that our boy Jack Andrew Gary Wiltshire is back employed at Bournemouth. He's signed a contract, him and his three first names. But now this week, I'm simply going to put him out there with just his last name, Pato. Where is he now?
Oh, Alexander Pato.
Real quick, before you Google it, how old do you think he is?
He's I think he's only 30, 31.
Dead on.
I was going to say 33.
Dead on.
I had just read an article about it because he wants to go back to Milan and play with Zlatan. He was relevant to me because of that article.
He's one of those ones that fell off the face of the earth, though. He had a great career going at Milan. He had a good 10 years there. He was like one of those, you know, boy wonder superstars. He's now back in Brazil.
Sao Paulo.
Is he Sao Paulo?
Yeah.
Because he's been saying in the article, he was like, yeah, he's like, I'm playing for trophies. I'm playing to win. If I wanted money, I'd have stayed in China. And I think I could play well with Zlatan in Milan. He's like, I love Milan. I love being there. I would love to play for them again. And I like Zlatan's playing style. And I think I could compliment that. And I think we could win trophies. And I was like, okay, all right, Pato. Well, journeyman Pato. Remember he used to play for Chelsea for that second?
Yeah, he had a two game spurt there, but he scored one game. So he can say he scored in 50% of the games he played in. Yeah. But he's someone, again, he hasn't been in Brazil's national side since 2013. Think about that, man. He was like maybe 18 at that time.
No, he had been older. No, than he had been
probably about what, 23?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah, about that. Yeah, crazy, crazy stuff. How that name used to be just the most every manager mode in FIFA you had in those times was just Pato was like one of the people he wanted to sign because his potential be like he'd top out like a 93.
It's weird that he kind of fell off too because he was so good. He was very dynamic, you know what I mean? He had a pretty unique style of play. He's quick, agile, and he just never really amounted to anything. He
just didn't click. That's it. For whatever reason.
Trying to take the route of like Kaká, you know, going through Milan and things like that. Yeah. Sort of taking that sort of route. And yeah. I mean, the Brazilian national team is one of those teams that I think, you know, I mean, they've got just such a plethora of great players, you know, they can pull from whoever and whenever they want. So their team changes like every tournament, there's a whole new team.
There's real. Yeah. Their B sides and A side literally everywhere else.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. So
like the team that they put forward for like, you know, the Olympics is like something that would probably win a World Cup three times.
I have a question for where are they now? Cause that's Pato. He's done for the day.
Yeah.
We'll call it a wrap on Pato. But here's
are we doing a double?
Yeah. Does it count if it's a coach?
Yeah.
So the double where are they now? The double where are they is Louis Van Gaal.
He's
why do I know where he is?
I'd be really someone surprised weird, like know where he is.
He's not in
isn't he in China?
Is he in charge of the who's in charge of the Dutch national team right now?
It's not him because they were talking about it being what's his name? Klopp.
I don't know where he's at. You've got me guessing.
I got you slipping. So
I'm not gonna look it up because I know
Louis Van Gaal took like an absence of football when he left Man United. He did not return.
Oh, he's still on his sabbatical.
Man United pretty much were like he pretty much was so confident that Man United would work out. When it didn't, he was like, I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. And I don't really blame him. I thought he was going to be the next best thing for Man U, and it just did not work out. Had a big career at Ajax, and even had a spell at Barcelona. So he was a good player and went on to have a pretty successful coaching career, and then United just killed him.
So he's just missing.
I just feel like he had a bad time at United. Alive. I think he had good plans with United, and I think he had, like, if he'd given more time, I think he'd have had a bit more success.
Agree. But, completely.
Yeah, more time he'd had success, but he was just like, every time he was in the press, he's like, man, he's like, you guys just suck here. Like, everyone's just so negative. Everyone's so like, give me time. Like, let me do my thing. I'm an established professional. Let me work on it. And they just didn't. United were in a more impatient time in their lives.
Yeah, they just had that breakup with Moyes, right? Yeah. It was just like, no, we're not doing this again. Get out.
United. Yeah. They're like on the, what's the new shiny new thing? Like, they're in that phase. Moyes, nope. Van Gaal, nope. And it was
like a rebound, and we were in a self-destructive phase.
Yes. That's exactly what it was.
So that's the where are they now part A and B. So stay tuned. And again, congratulations to Jack Andrew Gary Wiltshire. And, you know,
employment.
Fingers crossed for Alex Song as well.
Yeah.
Good looking out there. So, yeah, that's
Ben talking about coaches. But Phil Neville has left the England women's national team and is going to Inter Miami. Do you think? I know that there's so much of a connection between Phil Neville and David Beckham. That's why he's there. But do you think that Phil Neville is big enough of a coach to draw Lionel Messi over to the MLS to go play at Inter Miami?
No, Inter Miami has taken the unique approach to hire the boring brother in it, Inter Miami. And I think David Beckham and Phil Neville are still BFFs. Do you think David Beckham picked him up like blasting some old school Miami hip hop and was like, the boys are back? His role.
Lord, I hope so.
That's definitely how I'm envisioning it. No, I think it's an interesting hire. I think, you know, one thing I will say about the MLS as a whole is there's some work going on in the background pretty quietly in the academies, and they're overhauling their academies. If you look at what Atlanta has done, they've brought in some talent. I think it's actually Jack Collison is now the director of their youth football at Atlanta FC. And they're given these clubs a means to bring in European style development, which hopefully isn't just driven around finances of the US style. And I think Phil Neville and David Beckham potentially could bring that same sort of energy to Inter Miami, and hopefully they give the sport access to everyone across the board. Wasn't it, Steve, did you share something the other day about Zlatan being frustrated with how expensive soccer is in the States?
Yeah, it was funny. I think he just Zlatan during his time with LA Galaxy over here. He said for his kids to be in on a team on playing club soccer here in the States, it was like $3,500 a kid. I don't know how many kids he has. I think he has two, but it was like $3,500 a kid to be able to play club soccer for a season. And he's like, that's just an unreal model. He's like, for a game that is meant for everyone without a class system, it's made for everybody, no matter where you come from. The States has completely forgotten that, or just disregarded that, and has made it basically very, very pay to play. If you have money, you can play good club soccer here in the States. If you don't, you're not afforded those opportunities, is basically what Zlatan said. That wasn't the quote,
no,
but I just paraphrased.
I'm with
you.
And I think he's pretty much,
I think he's 100% correct.
Nail 100%. On the head, right? Like, even for players to get looked at by colleges, which is really the social equity piece that's missing in the States.
Yeah.
There's some really cool programs coming out, though, because people are recognizing it and they're trying to combat it. There's a school out of the Bronx. It's called South Bronx United. And it's an alternative education system for kids that have been kicked out of the school system. And basically what it is it's half day education, half day soccer academy work. And they have a tremendous success rate at getting kids diplomas, which is really, you know, fantastic to see, and see how the sport really does kids justice when they're engaged the right way through competitive sports, and also, you know, a sense of community that comes with it. So it was kind of nice to see Zlatan kind of take that dig. You'll notice he said that on his way out of the States and not his way in. And that's really, I think, where Jurgen Klopp was losing friends. Not Jurgen Klopp, I'm sorry. Klinsmann, I think that's where he was losing friends, is he had that mindset of overhauling ODP soccer to make it more accessible for everyone. And I think that was taking money out of people's pockets. But I think you'll see these academies, again, going full circle as you bring in these people like Phil Neville, David Beckham, and well-established players that came up in systems where it costs a pound to play. Hopefully you see that kind of transcendent opportunities for the kids that are good enough.
I wonder if there'll be any link between Inter Miami and what was it, Salford City FC, that where the Neville boys and Beckham, they invested in everything. Yeah. And because I think they're in League Two now.
They've made leaps and bounds from where they were when they were when they invested.
Yeah.
How many promotions they've experienced in that time? They are.
They're fifth place in League Two right now. They're behind Cambridge. They're 2 points away from being top. All right. They have two
unreal.
More games.
It's unreal.
Played two more games than the top team, but still, you know, I mean, that's pretty good going for a team that was, you know, just playing around in your Sunday league. Yeah. That's crazy.
They become another city group. You know, city group's got like different clubs in every continent.
Exactly.
They have like similar branding, like on the crest and all that. Yeah. Red Bulls as well. Miami and David Beckham and all those guys, they just make their own branding group as well.
Yep. So I kind of joked about Phil Neville, you know, being the guy to bring over Lionel Messi, but Pochettino, he's over at PSG, and apparently they have said that their sporting director, at least, has said that they are at the head of the table when it comes to talks for Messi to come to them. What do you put any stock in that?
No. I put zero in that. I mean, everyone can, I mean, not everyone. It's just gonna be a conversation between City and PSG at this point. I don't think any, or maybe Old Boys from Argentina, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But I think it's gonna be two people having a conversation in a room, and it's gonna be PSG and Man City.
What kind of furniture do you think is in that room?
Very expensive furniture.
Not folding chairs. Probably the most expensive furniture.
Yeah, not folding chairs, essentially. I don't know. Does Messi have any, besides being Argentinian, does Messi have any serious ties with Pochettino? I don't think so.
No.
I just think that's another club that he can go to and he doesn't really have to work that hard.
Perhaps. Yeah. I would argue less hard than what you'd have to at City.
Yeah. The Premier League, those guys will be just going for it, man. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I think I'd love to see him in the Premier League, even if he goes to a city as a United fan, right? Like, I would love to see it. I do think PSG actually fits his where he's at, right? Like, it's a place to go and retire.
Speaking of transfers, anybody heard any good transfer rumors?
The funniest transfer the funniest transfer I've seen in a bit, Luka Jovic, who Real Madrid signed for, I believe, £60 million a year and a half ago. From Eintracht Frankfurt. He had an amazing season in 2018, Luka Jovic. I can't remember how many goals he scored and how many appearances, but he did fantastic. They bring him to Real Madrid, and the guy never worked out. He played a handful of games, scored two goals in his entire career at Real Madrid. In a year and a half, scored 2.5 goals. They loan him back out to Eintracht Frankfurt. He scores two goals in his debut at Frankfurt right off the bat. And I think it's just so funny. It's like, I just, the socials are like, oh, he equaled his entire Real Madrid career on his one match back at Eintracht Frankfurt. Something wasn't working out there. It's just super funny to see that. And the coach is like, yeah, the air is good for him here. He's back home. It's good to see him back and not like being wasted at Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I thought that was a funny one.
The one I saw, I guess, is interesting is Mo Salah.
Real Madrid. You know,
linked to Real Madrid, but he insists that his future is in the hands of Liverpool, and that to me says pay me more or I'm going to Real Madrid.
I did see Sergio Ramos talks contracts with Sergio Ramos have reached a standstill. That's really? A little concerning for Captain Madrid. I would love to see him stay and see out his career at Real Madrid, but seeing those headlines, I'd have to look at the source as to where they came from.
The source was Ben Green.
But it is concerning. I thought that they were going to wrap that up soon. We're going to be seeing an announcement for Sergio Ramos soon, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah.
We'll
Oh, and Big Sam over at West Brom. He does not want Newcastle's Andy Carroll.
I don't blame him.
Hey, nobody wants
going
him.
Going back to Sergio Ramos real quick, the whole allure of that one, isn't it because he came up with Man United's academy? We'll go full circle here.
I think he came up. Real Madrid had bought him from Sevilla. I was under the impression he came up with Sevilla.
I don't know about that. I'm gonna choose to believe.
Yeah, no, they definitely bought him from Sevilla.
Choose to believe he came up in the United camp, but whether that's true or not,
we'll fact check it. We'll fact check it.
Let's see where that comes up. Alex is feverishly typing away. It's all in good sport, but I do want to see that happen big time. But no, Alex, to your point, Big Sam is already rescuing West Brom against the Wolves. Wolves haven't had a clean sheet in a long time, by the way. So if you are of the betting type and whoever Wolves are playing, they will concede. Let's just go that route.
Sergio Ramos emerged through Sevilla's youth academy. Spent two seasons with the senior side before going to Real Madrid in 2005.
That's a mistake. He was at Man United.
It's not true at all.
PK.
PK, I deny your reality and substitute my own.
Was it PK? Was PK?
PK. Yeah. PK. Yeah.
Same player. I don't care. Same person.
Same player. They both are married with Shakira. same person.
All right. So we've already had one trash take from Ben. Let's get a couple more. Looking ahead, there are not too many games in the Premier League in the next couple days. But anything stick out to you guys?
Are we allowed to throw in the mix an FA Cup result?
Why not?
Good. Let me get warmed up. Then I'm stretching the old brain for the trash takes. Can we just real quick recap on the trash takes from last week? Let me give you a high level overview. It started off with Steve saying that West Brom would tie Wolves. He needed to grow a set and say they'd win. It resulted in Alex saying that the Cartoon Army are going to beat Arsenal, which makes about as much sense as anything else. But one genius on this show who hasn't been mentioned yet said Brighton would beat Leeds. So we're right when it counts, and that's where I'm going to stick it. That being said, my trash take for this week, I'm going to the FA Cup. I think United are going to beat Liverpool 3-0.
3-0.
They're going to hammer them.
You've heard the trash take of this week.
I'm going to listen to this every day if I'm right, just so you know.
I hope you're not right, because they're going to hear about it every single episode.
I think Fulham on Wednesday is going to beat Man United 1-0. It's going to throw a whole spanner in the works for the entire championship run.
Big Sam. Can Big Sam pull up a result against West Ham? I think that'll be a draw.
Is that you West again? Ham. Calling a draw when it should be a win?
Yeah. Sam Allardyce. You think Big Sam will squeak a win away at West Ham? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Actually, all right. We're backing it. They're going to win. Two wins on the bounce.
Game was a whirlwind of emotions. There were three lead changes against Wolves. You think they're going to pull off? And there were two PKs. So there's something to be said there. But they got it done.
Yeah.
So we're going West Brom, Fulham. Yeah, we're going to keep it with those two. Yeah, and then we're going to go to Liverpool at
– Okay, keep that safe. Yep. All right.
That's how we're doing it. All right, so we're going with the two.
Perfect. All right, well, that is our trash takes. That is our podcast.
The only thing I have to say is Peter Law out. Get him out. Sack him.
Bruce out. Ashley out.
All right. Ricky Ricardo. Jimmy back. Ricky Ricardo. Jimmy back. Ricky Ricardo.